Welcome to Mum Fessions, the award-winning podcast that helps you navigate motherhood. I'm Laura Guckian, maternal mental health advocate, motherhood coach, founder of Mind Mommy Coaching, and most importantly, mum of three. I'm on a mission to change how we talk about and support maternal mental health. This isn't just another motherhood podcast, because you are my guests. Each week, I'll be sharing your mum fessions, the honest, raw, messy truths mums are often too afraid to say out loud. I'll unpack the guilt, the overwhelm, the rage, and the reality. And I'll give you practical tools to help you move into your happier chapter of motherhood. And this season, I've invited some special guests to help answer your mum fessions, because it takes a village. And this is the emotional village you need. Before we begin, can I ask you to do me a massive favor? Please hit the follow or subscribe button. This will help more mothers to find mum fessions. Coming up this week.
That's something that I struggle with sometimes, that asking for help.
I had to look at my dad and I was like, Daddy, I'm pregnant. And it was almost like I was a 15-year-old girl saying it.
The club that no one wants to be in.
Yeah, but so many of us are in. I remember like being about 4 days postpartum in the bed with the cabbage leaves.
What? Guilt isn't an ingredient.
Before we begin today's episode, I just want to give a little trigger warning that we briefly discuss the topic of baby loss. If you are in a place where you don't feel ready to listen to this right now, please skip and know that you can come back and listen to this at a time when you feel ready. I am so excited to welcome today's guest. I invited her on the podcast because, as a mum with three autistic kids who have massive sensory challenges with food, I can sometimes feel very overwhelmed when I'm on social media and feel massive pressure to give my children perfect food. And this lovely lady just has a more balanced approach to talking about food, and she seems like a lovely, lovely person. So I am so delighted to welcome the lovely GQ Jordan to Mum Fessions. How are you, GQ?
Good, thank you so much. That's so nice. I'm so happy to be here. And yeah, when you invited me, I jumped at the opportunity just because I love your whole approach as well. You know, and I think it's important to kind of interact with like-minded people in that sense. But yeah, I'm excited to be here. And as you kind of mentioned, my approach, I suppose, is a more balanced. Like you have been a consumer of social media for years and have seen how it can get overwhelming. And even with my clients and everything, it's so overwhelming. And you come to a point of decision paralysis where you don't know what kind of avenue to go down. Do you follow the high protein? Do you follow the high fiber? Do you cut out carbs? And it doesn't need to be that complicated and it doesn't need to be that divisive.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my approach, just to simplify and kind of bring it back to that balanced, foundational kind of way of eating.
Yeah, and I think that's key with motherhood in general. I think it's very black and white, and I think social media is one of the most damaging places for maternal mental health. And I think when anyone's taking an approach of all or nothing on social media, whatever it is, whether it's screen time or food, or it's not good. Mm-hmm. So you are here today to share your mum fession with us and help us answer an audience mum fession. But before we get into that, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to do what you do today on social media?
Yeah, well, I am Irish, like
yes,
you in here.
Second Irish guest. We're taking over.
I love it. I'm from Ireland. I grew up there and moved over to the UK 13 years ago. I was working in pharmaceuticals for the first decade of my professional life, working with lots of kind of diabetes clients and things like that there. And I saw the massive gap that there was in nutrition and supporting yourself on that side. You know, lots of things you can do at home to help yourself feel good.
Yeah.
I also, my brother, when we were young, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and celiac disease, proper double whammy there. But so I always knew that food was so important and could completely change how you feel. Mm. So I had that kind of red thread going out through my life, through my professional career. And it wasn't until I faced my own kind of health challenges. I was diagnosed with PCOS after much chasing of my medical team, and then faced fertility issues as well as that. And I wasn't really getting many answers. I was kind of told to come back when I wanted to start to build a family. And that didn't really sit well with me. I knew that the power of food.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tune back into that. Mm. So I retrained at night, at weekends. I became a nutritionist, a nutritional therapist, and started to kind of demystify food for women on that journey as well. And luckily, I fell pregnant. I didn't fall pregnant. I became pregnant.
Well, you may have fallen.
Well, then and I got pregnant. No, I became pregnant on my son. He's now 3. And that's just been the most incredible journey and the most growth, I suppose, I've experienced, because, I don't know, it just opens up your world, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It really does. And it expands you in ways that you didn't imagine. And that might sound corny, but it's really, really true. But through all of that, it kind of leads me on to my mumfession.
Oh, what is your mumfession?
Because when I was 4 months postpartum, I was so depleted. Mm. So depleted. And I was, you know, trying to do it all. Like you said, like looking on social media was definitely a part of that. But also my personality type as well. I put my hands up. I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie. I like a to-do list. I like to get through it. And I'm a bit of an achiever in that sense. All of those things put together, I wasn't following my own advice. Okay. I was, you know, because pregnancy and the fourth trimester and beyond, it's draining. Like, you're running on empty. And if you move that analogy even further of that kind of engine, like, we need to refuel the tank if we want to like feel our best. And I already mentioned like the power of food. It can change how you feel. It can change how you move through the day, how you interact with your family, your kids. And if you kind of extrapolate that even further, it can change your life. And I just had to kind of stop looking externally on social media, you know, to other people, I suppose, for, you know, what I should be doing, and just kind of tune back in.
Yeah.
And refill the tank, nourish my body, you know, fill those gaps, those nutrient gaps that are depleted after having a baby, like, say, DHA, a type of omega-3, B vitamins, all of these things that I just wasn't getting enough of, and I was underfueling. So it's just, I just had to pare it back.
Yeah.
And once I pared it back, got my meals in, prioritize sleep when I could. Obviously, I had a small baby. It's pretty difficult.
Yeah, I mean, that's saying sleep when the baby sleeps.
Oh, God.
Whoever.
Don't put me to that one, because
I've had 3 kids and
it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
There's like videos you see online where it's like sleep where the baby sleeps and the mum just like takes a kip in the park.
Like, yeah, exactly. But it's so interesting what you're talking about. Like, when you say you felt depleted at 4 months postpartum, can you tell me a little bit about what that felt like for you? Like, maybe like emotionally, psychologically, was it more physical depletion or was it more
everything.
Mentally?
Yeah. Everything. And I'm sure a lot of women and maybe yourself can relate to this. Like, I had such an identity shift crisis. Like, I didn't know who I was after having a baby. And I remember the day I was about 2 weeks after having my son, and I'll get on to your question, but I remember walking up to the local coffee shop. I would say walking, I was very slow. And I just had this realization, I'm never going to be alone again. This is me for the next 18 years. And obviously that's really lovely. But at that time I was like, there was like resentment towards my husband because I was breastfeeding or trying to breastfeed at the time. And I was like, oh, this is just so difficult. And my body is, after going through so much, I had a C-section. I was just really, really sore and just a bit broken.
Yeah.
And so to answer your question, when it got to that point around 4 months, I was emotionally drained. I didn't recognize myself, reactive, like angry. Like, I had that, I had such crippling anxiety, and I'd never had anxiety in my life, apart from like, say, before I did a running race when I was younger.
But it's
completely different.
It's a different feeling as a mother. It's, everything has felt,
oh my God,
particularly in that like postnatal stage, it's felt tenfold. And I hear this a lot from my clients and mothers, where they might be like, you know, I never experienced anxiety before. I've always been a very like calm person, and something happened where I just didn't recognize myself.
Oh my God.
And we're just so incredibly vulnerable. And yeah, it's and I love that you're sharing this because, and I talk about this all the time, we're just not talking enough about how hard it can be and helping women recognize they're not alone. And in that moment, did you feel kind of alone in that? Did you have friends who were mothers? Did you feel scared? Or are you like, this is just part of becoming a mother?
I did. I was kind of one of the first of my friends to have a baby. So it was, you know, my friends were also supportive, of course, because I'm quite open and I like to, I understand that if I don't tell, they won't know. So I was quite open about it, but there was that kind of, there was isolation in it as well. Because I didn't really know how to get out of it. I just knew that talking did help. So I did go and do therapy as well.
Brilliant.
That was so helpful.
Brilliant.
Just to get the thoughts out of my head. Because when they're stuck in there, they just ruminate and it's like they gain, I don't know, they grow and it just becomes a bit dark.
And even I think as a brand new mum, even doing something like therapy or coaching, I think it's even harder to do because you are so sleep deprived and exhausted. And someone might say, how are you feeling? And such a simple question, but we can't describe it because it's almost a, where do I begin? Am I scared? Am I angry? Am I sad? Am I grieving my old identity? Am I just exhausted? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the challenge of minding our mental health as new mums is we don't actually know how we're feeling and we're scared because we don't know why we're feeling like that.
Yeah, because it's all new territory.
It's completely new.
You're learning on the job. You've got like 10 different new jobs really going on and it's so overwhelming. And then again, you're running on empty and your body's still recovering and in whatever way you brought that baby to the world. And yeah, it was a scary time, definitely. And then I had such a challenging breastfeeding journey as well. On day three of postpartum, you know, having my son, I got mastitis and I was in A&E and I knew as a nutritionist that, you know, a fed baby is the best approach, right? But again, just somehow in my mind, this like wiring, and I don't know if it was from messaging that I was consuming, that I had to breastfeed at all costs.
Yeah.
And I just had this tunnel vision. And like I knew, I even went into having the baby and be like, you know what, I'll try it. If it doesn't work, grand, whatever. And I just kept going. I wasn't able to, my son wouldn't latch then. So that was another hurdle. So I was expressing and then the expressing was like another job.
It's really hard, isn't it?
The noise of that machine, I tell you.
You feel like a cow?
Oh my God. If I hear that noise, one of my friends was pumping there at a wedding I was at and I heard the noise. I was like, oh my God, it just took me back.
Yeah.
And I just kept going and I was just, you know, playing ahead. And I was kind of, I knew that it wasn't the right decision for me because I was like, I think I'm not okay. And the minute I kind of at that 4 month mark took a step back, slowed down, I was able to, you know, as I said, talk to someone, focus on those like foundational habits, eating enough at regular times. I started to feel a bit better and I was like, you know what, I think it's time that I stop this because my son's thriving and he takes a bottle, so it's all good on that side. It was just the right decision for all of us as a family.
And I'm so glad you raised this because like it's so interesting. This topic about breastfeeding probably, doesn't it, Abby? It probably comes up on every single episode of whatever path a mother took, whether she breastfed, whether she formula fed, whether it was a bit of both, there's strong feelings around it.
Absolutely.
And it's really interesting that you're talking about, you know, you're a nutritionist. So logically you were like, well, I know it's okay to give him formula too. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to put any pressure on myself, but yet you still kind of fell into that trap of, I must keep doing this, even though I'm finding it incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. And I suppose, what do you wish you could have said to yourself back then? Like, I don't know, was it day two or week two where you were feeling like, God, this breastfeeding is really hard. Yeah. And there was maybe a desire to stop, but you didn't. What would you love to tell yourself now if you could go back?
I'd say stop.
Yeah.
Like I genuinely would say stop. And like, you know, we're hoping to build our family out again, you know, hopefully in the next few years. And if and when I go through that process, there is zero pressure, and I'm briefing my husband when I'm in that when I'm in that zone. Don't let me go down the tunnel vision if it happens again. Just because I think as a mom, you become, even in those like first few, that first week, that it's like instant, you become the center of the family in a way. And if you are okay, that radiates out. Like literally everyone else is okay. Like if I'm in a family and my husband's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Not that that happens ever. I am glorious to live with.
You're perfect, perfect GQ. Never would perfect you be like one. That.
No, but I just think that, you know, I always say, that's advice I got from my mom. Like if you're okay, everyone else will be okay. Everyone else feeds off your energy. Like, and that's what you have to think about. It's not just you or some advice that, you know, you might have seen online. You have to think big picture.
Yep. I love that because I am worn out from saying it. I always say I am the most important person in my family. Like my needs must come first. Yeah. And when I first started saying that, women were like, what? That's like, so right. That's not what a good mother does. But actually, the good mother is a myth. It's something that was created by the patriarchal, the patriarchal motherhood system. Mm-hmm. And I think from the moment we can stop as women striving to be the good mother and actually start striving to be a happy mother, everything changes because like that, your decisions then are influenced by what's right for me and understanding that when I'm okay, everyone's okay. Absolutely. And like you said there, like in my house, if I'm in bad form, everyone is. Like I'm exhausted, everyone is. I can't be there for my children unless I'm okay. And I really wish, if I could turn the clock back to 9 years ago when I became a mother, I wish as part of the antenatal program, it was like, right, let's just forget about the baby for a minute. Mm-hmm. How do we mind mommy? What do you need? You're going to go through matrescence. Have you heard of matrescence before?
Me? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, why did we not know about that when we became mothers? Yeah. You're going to feel like this. It's all normal. This is how you mind yourself. Mm-hmm. And actually, we're telling you, you are the most important person. Mm-hmm. And I just wish every mother felt like that, but it's so sad how we're kind of led to believe a good mother sacrifices her own needs, that if you're breastfeeding and your nipples are cracked and you're in pain and it's impacting you, you must keep going. No!
100%.
Why?
So it doesn't make sense. I kind of know when you said the nipples are cracked. I remember having cabbage leaves in my bra.
Oh, the pain.
I still have the photo. It makes me.
And I still remember even for, I tried to breastfeed Leo. It didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And when I had Alex, I was like, I'm not even attempting it. And I remember my friend who couldn't breastfeed was saying, like, your boobs, the pain of that now when you're not breastfeeding is going to be something else. And I was like, how sore could it be?
Yeah.
I remember like being about 4 days postpartum in the bed with the cabbage leaves because apparently that calms it.
Yes.
And being like, this is the most pain I have ever been in. And there was a desire to like pump to get the milk out. Yeah, and then I was like, but I can't because that will make it worse. I don't want to activate it.
Yeah.
And again, these things are not spoken about. There's no easy way to feed. It's just all sore.
It's all sore. And it's exactly that. I love what you're saying. It's like mom is center. And like, we don't want to be martyrs. We want to be models of behavior.
Yes, you know? I love that.
So like, I want to model behavior and I know I've got a son, but I want him to be able to see women in a way that like, no, mommy's strong. Mommy's articulate. Mommy's able to like, you know, shout out when she needs help. That's all okay. And I just think, you know, it kind of moves into food as well and eating, you know, you want to model behavior. And it's not going to be a linear path, you know, you'll have like bumps in the road or whatever, but it's just starting how you mean to go on, I suppose.
And we're going to talk more about the food in a moment because we have a really good momfession around that. But like you mentioned there before that you felt a bit isolated. Mm. I think you used the word isolated. What did that feel like for you? And what do you mean by isolated when you were like a brand new mom, maybe 2 or 3 months postpartum?
It's like a scary time, isn't it? And like I said, like you had a similar experience that you were one of the first of your friendship groups. So
that's really hard, isn't
it? Hard.
Nobody talks about this because like for me, and you mentioned it kind of the grief of and the realization of I am forever more a mother. Mm-hmm. Like no matter what I do from now on, I'll never not be a mother again. Yeah. Like, and that hits hard. It's like my life as it was is gone.
Is gone. And people did talk to me about it beforehand, but it's not till you go through, like, you're like, I just want to be a mom. And of course, like, I just wanted to be a mom when I was, because, you know, we had some, it was a long journey to get pregnant in that stage as well. But it didn't detract from that kind of experience either. That feeling of, you know, and seeing some of my friends still going out and then me having to like plan. And I know that that sounds so like, so fickle or whatever, but it's such a shift.
It's such a shift. And it's not fickle because that piece of like my friends going out and living their life, that was our life. Like that was part of meeting our needs. Yeah. Like that stuff isn't fickle. That was part of socializing. Yeah, it was part of connecting. It was part of, and like I hear this a lot as well, the loss of friendships when you become a mother. And again, is this kind of society telling us, oh, they're just fickle things? But actually, no, there are core needs that are not being met. And I think that's what leads to us feeling so lonely, so isolated. And I remember looking at all of my friends being like, oh my goodness, I just wish somebody understood how hard this felt. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until, you know, I think a year or two later, they started having kids. And I remember one of them saying to me, oh my God, I finally realized what you were going through. And I'm so sorry that I wasn't there for you. And my response was, but it's not your fault that you didn't understand. You can't possibly understand what it feels like to be a mother until you're in it.
Yeah.
And I know I asked you the question, but I think it is partly the isolation is the lack of connection with the people that you connected with before. Yeah. And that could be your partner, because let's be honest, I don't know about you, but for me, that was like a grenade into the relationship, your friendships, your colleagues. Maybe if you're someone that worked in an office, everything changes.
Oh, you're so right. And yeah, it's just bringing it back. The more you're speaking, it's putting me back in that time. And it is that connection piece where, you know, you're trying to convey to your friends that maybe don't have kids at that time, like, this is how I'm feeling. And then almost feeling like you're complaining because you're talking at them,
but
there's not that level of understanding, maybe. Not, you know, no shade on them. But also in that, when we talked about, like, you know, there's so many jobs when you become a mom, trying to make new friends on top of that. And it's just, making friends as an adult is difficult.
I'm so glad you're talking about this.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
My social battery is like minimal now. And then add a newborn baby on top of that, it's like minuscule. So then you're talking, and then you're connecting with people and you're like, oh, are we actually friends? Are we just friends because we've got babies? And you know what? That's a real connecting piece. I'm still actually friends with a lot of those ladies.
Yeah.
So I actually think, you know, in that moment when there's a lot, I feel like when you join an NCT group or, you know, Bump and Baby, whatever your prenatal support might be, you are connected by something that maybe, you know, is just situational in a way.
You connected in the trenches. And I think that stays.
Yeah.
And I think why it stays is, like you're saying there, if you're trying to express to your friend how you're feeling, I think it is very hard, and I mentioned it earlier, as a new mother, to say how you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And even if you can, words don't actually sum up the feeling of, I'm absolutely exhausted beyond anything.
Yeah.
I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah.
My whole body aches. My mind is full.
Yeah. I'm arguing with my
husband. I feel completely lost. I'm grieving my old life.
Mm.
I'm told I can't complain about anything because that's not what a good mother does, and you should be grateful.
Mm-hmm.
It is honestly the wildest, hardest time of our life. And I think that's why those connections with whoever it is in that postpartum stage, whether it is like a mother and baby group, maybe it's that one friend, but it's someone that can just make you feel seen and go, I see you. I know how hard it is.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's just so important. It's so important. And that's like you're talking about, like, yeah, that connection piece, it just makes you feel a little bit less alone. You feel seen. You feel like you're being understood. Because I suppose a lot of the, not like you mentioned, the narrative of being a good mom is being quiet and whatever.
No,
and
to hell with that. We're redefining that. Being a good mother is a myth, but I think being a happy mother is about putting your needs first, doing what's right for you, recognizing that you are the most important person in your family.
Yeah.
And in order to mind your children, you have to be okay. Like, think of it like a car.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we would not get into our car with an empty tank of diesel and go, why is it not moving?
Absolutely.
We would be like, well, of course, we need to fill it up. We need to keep it at a certain level. Yeah. The car can't move without diesel. But when it comes to motherhood, it's somehow this expectation of you keep running on empty and you keep going and going and do not complain about it.
Mm-hmm.
and do not say it's hard because we must enjoy every moment. Like, it's utter rubbish.
I'm 100%.
Like, it's 100%. Utter rubbish.
I love the car analogy. We're deep in that.
But it's so true.
It is, though. And it's the simplest way of communicating it. It's like, we just need to be kind to mom. I think, you know, there's a lot to be said about just like, I don't know where I was going with that one. I've seen a lot of things online, you know, men being like, oh, what have women done? I'm like, we have created 8 billion people.
What have we done?
Yeah.
Like, we make humans. Yeah. I always say this to my kids if I ask, like, I'm on my 9-year-old's back now all the time going, brush your teeth, brush your teeth, brush your teeth. He just does not want to brush his teeth. I hope I'm not alone in that. And if he ever is like, oh, stop, mommy, or don't do that. Or if I ask him to do something and he won't, I'm like, Leo, I literally built you. Like, I built you in my stomach. Like, you will do what I say. Yeah, yeah. And it's wild. And even Anna now, who's 4, will sometimes go, can I go back in your tummy? And I'm trying to explain to them that they started as this little speck and they grew and grew and grew. And that's kind of my line to get them to do what I want. I'm like, I built you. Like, I built you.
I love it.
And it's so true. And it's back to the car again. And I think this is why it's so hard to express how you feel as a new mom, or even I'm in motherhood 9 years now, and there's still times where I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
It's like the car again. If that's completely like no diesel in it, if the battery is flat, you can't even turn it on.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we can't even communicate because we are so utterly depleted. I've lost my train of thought now because we've gone.
No, you're grand.
Miles
you're grand. No, we're just.
This is what happens. We go up and down.
Sure, I didn't know where I was going. I had like this vision of something in my head, and I just started talking. I was like,
"Yeah, you're like this. This is going to be deep. What was it?
Probably deep, and it just got out of my head.
It's because we're mothers and we're tired.
Literally, it's been a busy week for both of us. Okay.
There's something you mentioned, and again, we don't have to talk about this, but it's something I hear a lot. You mentioned, you know, it took time. To have your first baby.
Yeah.
Did that make it harder for you to then say, I'm finding this hard?
Yes.
Why?
100%. Because I wanted it so much and I worked towards it so long and it was a real journey. I find that word really, I'm not sure if I like the word journey, but it was a process. Absolutely. It was a long process. And also the layer on top that I'm a nutritionist and I help people feel better. I help women prepare for postpartum. And I wasn't even able to follow my own advice. And I'm not going to say able. I'm going to be kind to myself there because it's just a slow erosion, isn't it? It's over time. It's not something that you just, oh, I'm really depleted one day. It's like a gradual process after a major life event in your body, you know, and it's just that slow. So I'm going to be kind to myself and, you know, say that it's not something that everyone's going to identify straight away. But yeah, because we had gone through like rounds of assisted conception, they were cancelled and failed. Medication was given wrong. It wasn't. So that was, it was really disappointing. And then, you know, when we got pregnant, it was just so amazing and pregnancy was really good. And then the birth wasn't great, but because I totally agree with that, it felt harder to say this is difficult. Yeah.
It's this pressure, isn't it? Of almost you should. And again, there's no shoulds in motherhood, but because
that line, there's no shoulds.
Oh, it's ingrained in me. There's no shoulds in motherhood. There's no shoulds in life. No, do whatever you need or want. But I think it's there's an expectation anyway, as a mother, you should be grateful and happy. But I think especially if we use the word journey again, but your journey to having a baby was going through, you know, fertility treatments or whatever that is, there's an extra layer of pressure of you absolutely must enjoy every moment of this now. You are not allowed to say this is hard. Mm-hmm. Why? Like, it's like getting an injection. Again, I'm back to my analogies, but like,
I love them.
Like, an injection hurts no matter what you're getting or what you to do to get it. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, no, you must, that shouldn't feel hard. Or putting your hand into hot water. It's still going to feel hot regardless of the circumstances to getting there. And like, I really, you know, I very luckily never struggled to have babies. I had 2 miscarriages. I'm very lucky I can get pregnant very quickly.
Yeah.
Not so good at keeping those pregnancies.
And I think as well, like, emotions aren't felt in silo. You can feel multiple things at the same time. You can be grateful, but still feel like you're walking through mud.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's the same, like, I'm sorry about your miscarriage. I experienced one on the 1st of Jan this year.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, you're grand. Like, automatic response. No, it's grand.
Such an Irish thing. No, I'm grand.
Irish thing. It's like, oh, I'm grand. Don't worry about me.
Yeah. Leg hanging off. I'm fine. I'm grand.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think it's a woman response as well to when we say we've had a miscarriage. It's like, no, I'm fine. No, we're not fine. Mm-hmm. It's very traumatic. It's a loss.
And it's a silent loss.
It's a silent loss, which it shouldn't be.
Exactly. And I think with miscarriages as well, what I found myself was the fact that there is no like outward ceremony to grieve.
Yeah.
There's not a funeral. There's not that finish, like, you know, that definite closure that you get sometimes.
It feels like it's all in your head.
It's all in your head and you have to hold it yourself, and it's a really heavy burden. And like for when it was 14 and a half weeks.
Oh, so wow.
It was after that 12-week mark, which you're told like, oh.
Again, oh, you'd be fine at 12 weeks. No.
It's like, walk into like just safety, and it's not. And that's what was quite tough about it, was because you let your guard down. Not guard, but your barriers down. Yeah. You start to envisage the life.
Yeah.
Think about this little baby. We found out it was a girl.
Oh, wow. And it's, I'm so sorry. And I can really relate to what you're saying. I remember during my second miscarriage, and I always thought this was really strange. I was at home and like TMI, but, you know, I was bleeding heavily, like couldn't leave the toilet. And anyone who's experienced that at home. And I had this wish of, I was like, I wish I could have at least have had the respect to be brought into hospital. And I don't know why, but it was almost like, well, if I'm in a hospital setting, then this is real and this is a loss. Whereas I'm at home in my bathroom. This isn't real.
You're on your own.
And you're on your own. And I kept ringing the hospital going, can I come in? And they're like, no, not unless you're... Ugh. And then a friend of mine experienced, another miscarriage. And I remember her saying, I'm so glad I had to go into hospital. And I was like, I totally...
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
Well, you're being looked after.
You're being looked after. They're saying this is real. This is a loss. And absolutely.
You're broken. You're like, it's your nightmare.
Yeah.
You want someone to take you, look after you. No matter, obviously it's an awful situation, but you want to be looked after. And by them not allowing or giving you that, that's awful.
And I think as a woman as well, like we talk about mom guilt and the pressure to like enjoy every moment. But I think as a woman, And like, I know logically this isn't true, but the first time it happened, I'm like, what did I do wrong? Like, my body is supposed to build these babies. And now, obviously, it's nothing I did wrong. Sometimes pregnancies just don't hold. But yeah, I just... And the thing is, that I've spoken to so many mothers, like I speak to mothers every day, and it's more rare to find a woman that hasn't had a miscarriage.
Yes.
Than it is a woman that has. It's kind of this unspoken bond we all have. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, is it the solution that we're teaching our young girls that if you want to become a mother, this is almost part of the process? Like you need to prepare that you may very well have a miscarriage.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, because it would never take the sting out of it. Of course not, because it's everything you're hoping for and you're working towards, and it is, you know... an experience that you wouldn't wish on anyone.
Yeah.
It's the club that no one wants to be in.
Yeah, but so many of us are in.
So many of us are in. And I think, by talking about it, it's the same as anything when it comes to motherhood, because that's part of it. You know, it's part of the journey, hopefully, for a lot of people. And if we talk about it more, then we're more prepared.
Yeah.
We have thought through, like, how would that feel? I think it's when you're caught off guard by something. You kind of like it, to process it, it takes a while. Like,
it does,
it takes a good amount of time. And when I went through it, I didn't have the guilt about what did I do wrong, because that was also a journey. It took ages to get pregnant. And then we fell pregnant and I was delighted with myself. And I did everything right.
Did it kind of come as a massive shock? Because as you say, it sounds to me like your focus was on... It was so much work to get pregnant. Mm. And then it was almost like, oh, phew. Mm. Like, did you even foresee that as something? Obviously, we all know it could happen.
No.
But was it more like a train hitting you then?
Train hitting me.
Yeah.
I said to my mum once before I got pregnant, I was like, I'll just get pregnant and I just know my body will hold it.
Because that's what we're told.
I know.
You know, positive pregnancy test equals baby.
Yeah.
And it doesn't.
It doesn't. And it doesn't. Yeah, exactly. Like input doesn't mean output, you know?
Oh my goodness.
No, it doesn't.
I love that. Because for me, like once I had that miscarriage, it's in a way I was so wonderfully naive for my first pregnancy. And it takes that from you. You are forever robbed of being naive in pregnancy because you forever more realize a positive pregnancy test does not equal a baby.
I know.
And until that baby is out and in your arms.
Yeah.
For me, I didn't accept I was pregnant.
I know. I think I'd imagine I'll be the same on my next time as well.
Yeah.
Touch wood. Where's the wood?
It's wood. Marble? What's this? Is this marble? Hardly. Over 80% of you told me that scrolling on social media makes you feel like you're failing as a mother. We are the first generation of mothers who have access to social media. At our fingertips, we are being shown images of perfect motherhood and how a mother should feel every minute of the day. The thing is, social media can't meet you where you are at. It doesn't do justice to the grey areas of motherhood. That's why I created The Village. It's a space off the scroll, away from the noise, and it's built to meet you exactly where you are. I'm offering all Mumfessions listeners 30 days of free access to The Village. Click the link in the description below for immediate free access. I can't wait to support you there. How do you think, and maybe we talk about it together, our experience of growing up in Ireland and that sort of Catholic shame and how do you think that impacted us as we became mothers? And maybe people listening from the UK might have had that to a degree as well. But there's nothing like that Irish Catholic shame that really like made us feel like sinful. Like I remember telling my parents I was pregnant. I was married and I was, oh my God, they know I've had sex.
Yeah.
I can't. I remember us driving down from Dublin with my husband and we knew we had to tell my parents I was pregnant. I was like, I can't do this. And he's like, get a grip. You're 30 years of age. I'm like, but they'll know we had sex, Brendan. And he's like, well, of course we had sex. We're married. And
I'm
like,
I actually can't
like, I can't like, I had to look at my dad and I was like, daddy, I'm pregnant. And it was almost like I was a 15-year-old girl saying it. Yeah. And that's the level it impacted me. It was like sex is shameful. All of these things are shameful. Like, I don't know. Can you relate to that at all?
I can't. I'm the youngest. My sister probably had it more than me. Because, you know, being the first girl in the family, that's probably, she led the way. But I think in general, like, I know in my friendship group and their families and my family at home, like it was like, you don't talk openly about sex. You don't talk about sex education. You don't talk openly about miscarriages or pregnancies or anything. Now, my mum is incredible.
And brilliant.
She's like superwoman. Like she comes in, takes care of you. And I had her for 2 weeks over in the UK when I had my son. But I think that kind of Irish upbringing, I suppose, it definitely impacts how your ability to communicate your emotions. It impacts your ability to just connect with people, I suppose, when you're going through something bad. And I think it's funny because, funny is the wrong term, but it's interesting, I suppose, that I've really noticed that recently. Like I went back to therapy this year after my miscarriage because I just want to be in the right place, best place possible for my son, but also for the next time I try.
Yep.
And I was unpacking all of those things, like my ability to understand how I'm feeling and tell people and ask for help.
Yeah.
That's something that I struggle with sometimes, that asking for help, because you go back to the classroom setting when you're younger and you're like told like cunis, like quiet, you know, like
our one bit of Irish there. Cunis is be quiet for anyone listening.
Well,
what? Can I go to the toilet? There's the only two phrases we can speak in Irish.
Oh my God,
I'm getting flashbacks. It wasn't nice.
No,
I can actually see myself back in the classroom.
Yeah. And it was that environment where you're kind of told to be quiet. Yeah. You're told to listen. And if you don't know, you've to figure it out. And I'm sure that's that's not my whole experience. I did have lovely teachers and, you know, experience in my school and everything like that. It was a lovely school, but I think it's more on the broader sense that that was how we just kind of approached things, I suppose.
And something that just came to my mind here now, and this is probably deep. We'll finish on this before the Mumfession, but I think our generation, like if you think back, the last mother and baby home in Ireland closed in 1998. right? So if you think about that, so anyone listening from the UK, the mother and baby homes were like, how do we even explain it? It was where unmarried women were sent who got pregnant outside of marriage. Yeah. And to say there was abuse, there was murder, they sold babies.
Chills.
It was horrendous. And the government let this happen. The church let it happen. Mm-hmm. It's a whole thing if you ever want to look it up. Mm-hmm. But like the last mother and baby home closed in Ireland in 1998. So I was what, 13? 13? So I would have been aware.
Absolutely. Oh, so aware. At 13,
so aware.
100% aware. Yeah. You're aware of your changing body. You're aware of everything at that stage.
Yeah.
It's like.
I think there was this kind of subconscious fear among young girls of our generation of that's what happens if you are not a good girl. Like, I don't know if that's even making sense, but I do think it has impacted us.
There would have been like a hangover from it, I suppose.
I think there still is because Ireland didn't look after mothers. I wonder to this day, is that what stops maybe Irish mothers going, this is hard? Or I don't know. It's very deep. It's very deep. But it's just something, as we were talking there about how did our like childhood and going through the Catholic school education impact. But like, of course, that impacted us.
Yeah.
And then seeing it on the news as teenagers and early 20s, what was then discovered afterwards and the damage that was done there.
And maybe it's not even like the Catholic school side of thing. It's just like how, because there was such a link between church and state for so long.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah.
And that would just impact how the women's role in the household and what you were, going back to my mom, she's superhuman because she does so much.
Yeah.
She cares for everyone, all the grandkids, all of the kids, like, you know. She goes above and beyond, and she learned that from her mum.
Yeah.
And my sister and I always laugh because we see ourselves when we're dealing with our kids or our roles sometimes in our house. It's very 50-50 amongst our husbands or whatever, but I still see like traits coming out. So it's like it's that learned behavior.
Yeah. It's the cultural piece of the good Irish mammy
does
it all. And like when you even say Irish mammy, you can see this vision of this woman doing it all, the tea is going. And I think what's hard for us, but what's also wonderful for us, is we are the first generation of women to go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Don't think I want to do that. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why our generation are struggling so much in motherhood, because we're pushing the boundary. But I also think it's what's going to make it easier for the generation to come. Like, I look at my daughter, Anna, and if she ever becomes a mother, I hope me blabbering on here and talking about it, it's going to create a change where she'll still find it hard, but she won't blame herself.
Yeah.
And that's the key. And she won't be trying to do it all. And she won't be like...
And also you talking like this is going to help your sons as well. You know, it's like, it's both sides of the equation.
Yeah.
Because, there needs to be... there needs to be an equilibrium there between, all sexes, whatever you are, whatever way you could like identify. And it's just that needs to happen across the board, because it can't always be the woman.
It can't
fighting.
Be the woman. No,
that's exhausting.
It's exhausting. And my little boy said to me recently, and I'm like, oh God, how much do I complain at home? He's 9. He's like, I don't know if I ever want to become a daddy. Mm. And I was like, that's totally cool. You might not want to become a daddy. And you don't have to become a daddy. But that option was never really given to us growing up. It was just assumed you'd become a mother. And
I know,
mum fashion for me, I love my children. Disclaimer, I love my children. I would not give them back for the world. But if someone had set me down as a teenager or early 20s and said, this is how it will actually feel for you, Laura, would I have jumped into it so quickly? I don't know. Would I have become a mother? I don't know. And that's really hard to say. But I think a lot of women probably feel like that. If they're being really honest, they have had the thought of, did I make the wrong decision becoming a mother?
Yeah.
And there's times where I certainly feel like I did. And I can feel that and love my children. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the feeling of less about regret, but it's more about, I wish someone told me how hard it would be.
Yeah.
Does that connect in any way?
Absolutely. Because you feel like you're going into it blind otherwise. It's like, it's that blindsided feeling, I suppose.
Yeah.
You want to feel informed. You want to feel like, in any situation, you want to go into it feeling confident that you know what to expect and you're not going to be blindsided.
We were blindsided.
Yeah. In some ways, I'm like, to play devil's advocate, I was like, I'm kind of glad I was, because if I had to worry about it and then experience it. Yeah. Like double experience.
Yeah. Well, maybe we're set up biology-wise to not know it. Maybe that's why I don't know.
Lock it out.
Yeah. God, this went deep. Should we listen to an audience confession and move on to something less mother and baby home-esque?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Work away.
I am so done with seeing perfect lunchboxes and dinners on social media and the pressure to only buy perfect labels. My children are all fussy eaters, and no matter what I've tried, nothing changes. I'm over this whole UPF conversation and just want someone to tell me I'm not a terrible mother for giving my children dry pasta and Nutella. I feel guilty every single day, and honestly, at this stage, I feel like I'm just harming my children.
You're not a terrible mother for giving your children dry pasta, Nutella. That's from me.
Yeah. God forbid we have a bit of Nutella. I can relate to this. I was actually saying this to you before we started recording.
Yeah.
My three kids are autistic. Massive sensory challenges with food. When I say I've tried it all, I've worked with occupational therapists, with nutritionists. Mm-hmm. I've tried every trick in the book. Mm-hmm. They will not eat certain foods. Most of our days are dry pasta. Breakfast is Nutella and toast. Like, they don't eat. So mm-hmm. I know I'm not a quote unquote bad mother mm-hmm. because I have the awareness of, for me, the goal is to get something into my children's tummies.
Yep.
I don't care if that's like a bar of chocolate. That's what they're having.
But that's the right approach.
Like, that's though. The right approach. But I know from so many of my clients that something has happened on social media recently, which has, I think, and I'd love to hear your view on this, shifted, I suppose, information to the pressure to only give children perfect foods. Mm-hmm. And I find it really damaging. And as someone whose children don't eat, mm-hmm. I can block that out now and go, oh, that's not relevant to me. Like mm-hmm. all my child had today was Nutella and toast, a bit of popcorn and a chocolate bar. We're good.
Absolutely.
Right? But I know so many mothers who might not have the privilege that I have of the work I've done. Mm-hmm. And they see that content and they think I'm a terrible mother mm-hmm. because I'm not giving them these perfect foods. So that's my stance on it, right? As a nutritionist, what's your view on this kind of, I don't know, is it a trend? Is it a shift? But I definitely feel the last year or two, the conversation around UPFs and eating, I don't even know if I'm using the right language here, but like the perfect foods mm-hmm. is damaging the mental health of mothers.
It's everyone, especially mothers, like especially, well, this listener, I doubt she's in isolation. I'm sure there's lots of people who can relate to it, but I completely agree. I think there has been this like hyper fixation on UPFs
yep.
and reading labels. I see a lot of content people yep. going in, reading labels and like, you know, get it like othering food, you know, just like it's because food is so much more than just fuel. We've touched on it before. It's yep. connection. It's joy. It's a time where families can get together and connect. And I think sometimes that's the most important thing when it comes to kids, because I would bet there's not a household across the UK and Ireland that doesn't have a fussy eater. But
is that not part of children growing up? Like we call them fussy eaters, but like, is that not the norm? Because I see these picture perfect lunchboxes and these picture perfect dinners. Yeah. And I'm like, I have been a mother for 9 years. My children have never eaten that and I can't be alone. Is that not part of children learning to eat?
Yeah.
That they are not going to eat the meat and two veg or the broccoli or like, is it kind of back to what we were talking earlier about motherhood and, you know, building more awareness that the norm is it is hard. Is that not the norm that children won't have that food, but yet we're labeling them as fussy eaters? Does that make sense?
It does
anyway?
Make sense. It does make sense. And I think all of the having fussy eaters or people or kids who maybe reject certain food, that's also part of them learning their independence. And
yeah.
Like, you know, there's so much more to it than just getting the fuel in.
Yeah.
But with the UPF kind of thing as well, it's going back to what you said when you approach mealtimes with your kids. It's like a fed kid is that's the goal.
It's whatever, like the breastfeeding.
It's what exactly.
Exactly. Like breastfeeding was not possible for all of us. Some of us didn't want to do it.
Yes.
Some of us didn't want to do it. Some of us couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But like a fed baby.
Yep.
And a happy mother.
That's
is the only goal.
Exactly. And when you put too much pressure around mealtime, like this kind of content is doing, it's fueling this kind of pressure. that's when food becomes an issue, I think, for a lot of kids.
Okay.
And a lot of people. It's, you know, it's not just kids, it's adults. If we take that pressure off and focus on mealtime being primarily to connect.
Yeah.
Sit down as a family, have a chat about your day, communicate with your kids, like allow them to kind of use those skills and work on those skills. You know, model behavior like we talked before. You eat your foods, they'll be curious at some stage. And if they're not, they're not.
Yeah.
But I think just kind of getting it back to the core and to this listener especially, it's like, you're definitely not alone in this. And it's kind of going back to the language I was talking about at the start. It's tuning out the noise.
Yeah.
And tune just back into what matters to you and your family. Because like, who cares who's going around the supermarket saying this is in this label, this is in that. That doesn't really impact you and it shouldn't impact your day to day.
Yeah.
What matters is the happiness of you and your family, and not just the happiness because, you know, the emotional intelligence or emotional expansion or whatever you want to call it of your family, and what works for your family is what should be prioritized.
Yeah.
You know, and like if it is just dry pasta and Nutella, that's fine. Work with that.
Yeah.
Not make it a deal, I suppose, for want of better language, but focus on that. Say, you know, and then focus on the connection as being the prime kind of outcome of those mealtimes so that the stress is taken away from it. And then, you know, eventually find safe foods that maybe they're willing to try and expand it slowly. That's how I would kind of advise working and broadening that out. Zero pressure. Don't worry about you're not harming your child at
all. You're not harming them. And this conversation, like UPF, for anyone that hasn't been kind of hearing it, it's ultra processed foods. Yes. But am I not right in saying most foods are processed to a degree? Like, yes. I remember there was something I was speaking to another nutritionist. We were just chatting and I was like, isn't it great that Marks and Spencer's brought out this cereal that is just, it was like two ingredients.
Oh,
and she was like,
had that range,
it actually isn't because they've now removed the nutrients that are in it. Now, I could be describing that wrong, but it was basically something that I thought was better because it's not processed.
Exactly.
Which she was trying to explain.
Yeah.
It's not always... processing isn't always a bad thing. It can add. And now there's a narrative that you're just trying to strip it back. And by doing so, you lose the nutrients.
Absolutely. It's like focusing on the fact that like single ingredient food's better just because it's a single ingredient.
Yes.
That doesn't equate. There is always that sensationalization of food. And there always has to be something to avoid. There always has to be the kind of demonized thing. It used to be carbs. Then it was, you know, fats, and then it's back to sugar. You know.
And that's really, do you think we look back at this time? Because I remember growing up like in the noughties and it was like carbs were the devil.
Mm.
Do you think we look back at this time and this conversation around UPFs will be one of those chapters where we go, wow, did we absolutely
100%
lose ourselves there?
I think so. And like with protein and UPFs, definitely. I think
the protein conversation blows my mind. I'm like, really? Sorry, like how much am I supposed to have?
I know.
It's a lot.
And like to kind of add a bit of balance to it, like obviously at the core, at the kind of core of the argument around UPFs, it is good to challenge the food industry, of course, to raise our standards when it comes to, you know, our products that are on our shelves. But yeah, this kind of like demonization of it, they serve a purpose. They help people nourish their family. And there are nutrients in there.
Yeah.
That, you know, there are nutrients and it really does serve a purpose for a lot of people. Not everyone can go out and cook a meal that's just whole foods based. I certainly don't most of the time.
Yeah. Like, and even if you do, we can't force our children to eat it.
Exactly.
And I think that's the key. And like, I'll be straight up here now. And I want you to be real with me. I really struggled with this years ago. As I say, I was working with occupational therapists, nutritionists. We were going through all the steps. There's some evenings my children will eat a pot noodle and I don't care. I am like, you know what? Their tummies are full. If that had been even 2 years ago, I would have felt like the worst mother in the world. But now I've surrendered. I'm like, that's all they're going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've just shifted my whole brain of, yes, there's information out there. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the core for social media. That information is not always built for you and your needs.
Mm-hmm.
And when I see that now, it just washes over me. Right. I don't have any negative opinion about it or positive. It's just completely neutral because I'm like, that's not built for me and my family. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pull out my pot noodle.
Yep.
I'm going to get my dry pasta.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally our house constantly has two or three bags of those processed chocolate croissants from Aldi, because if Alex doesn't have that within a half hour of waking, he completely like becomes dysregulated. He has to have one when he comes home. He eats about four of them a day. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm sharing this is for any mum that's listening going, yeah, oh my goodness, I put Nutella on my child's toast.
Oh my God, don't worry about it.
I'm giving my children pot noodle.
Yeah.
Like, not because that's what I want to give them.
No, exactly.
But it's because it's the only thing they will eat.
Absolutely.
And I don't feel any shame or guilt about that.
No, there shouldn't be at all. At all. At like, all, at all. And I think as well, I have experience with my nephew has, you know, he's on the spectrum and yeah, has difficulty with foods. And until you've seen a child, you know, go through that journey themselves, it's, you can't control it.
You can't control it. And I actually don't think,
go with them, support yeah, them on the way and yeah, help them figure it out. And to label someone as good or bad or whatever, you know, it's just not helpful. Like, how is that helpful?
It's not helpful. And I, again, coming as an autistic mother, like, I've worked with so many experts and I don't know if the experts know how to support autistic children yet. And that's not a criticism of them. I just think we're going to learn so much more about it over yeah, the coming years. And like one trick I do have, you might be appalled at this now, is every meal I give them, yeah, I will put a treat on it. And I don't even like calling them treats, but like for breakfast the last week or two, yeah, Anna will only sit down and have it if there's some of those mini marshmallows on the side. And she will eat them first, but then she will take a bite out of the apple. And then she will, every single meal has something that I would have been told before is a bad food. And I'm like, well, if that's the food that will get them to engage in the food, on you go. I think
that's a really clever idea.
Yeah, like there's something, there's either a little bit of crisp, a little bit of chocolate, a little jelly.
Amazing.
And that will get them to connect with the food.
Yeah.
And there was even a morning during the summer where Anna got up and she was like, I want an ice pop for breakfast. I'm like, good, take it. This is not a fight, because yeah, if I challenge this now, one, she's going to be really upset, but two, I'm going to get completely depleted and I don't have mm-hmm, the energy for it. Mm-hmm. She had the ice pop and then she had her toast with peanut butter. Nothing. Like, and I'm sharing
that. I think you've cracked it.
I don't know. Maybe I am the expert now. Who knows? But like what I do know is as a mother, yeah, I have made a conscious decision that I am no longer going to feel guilty mm-hmm, or I'm going to doubt the food I'm giving my children, because I just want them to have something in their tummy.
That's it. I really love that. It's exactly what I was kind of saying as well. Like I think that approach is healthy in the sense of going back to that thing of just taking the stress away from food. Because for so long, even now, even with my clients, like food is one of the main yeah, stressors. It creates so much like mental load for people, you know, the worry of, am I healthy? Am I not? And then adding kids into the equation, that's just like a tenfold, you know? So I think that's a great idea. It's like an entryway into a nice meal.
Have we a nutritionist giving us permission to put sweets on our children's plate?
But I'm serious. Like even for like adults though, it's like, I think, you know, your healthiest diet has room for the foods you love.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell my clients. It's like if the most sustainable ones has room for the foods you love, because you're more likely to stick with it. And over time, your daughter, okay, having an ice pop every now and then yeah, in the morning, that's going to broaden her, like expand her experience of food.
This was such, again, we went up, down in our round. We talked about everything, but I have found it really, really helpful, GQ, because what you've done, and I kind of suspected you would do this, is I hope this episode has really given mothers permission, particularly around food, to let that guilt and pressure go. Absolutely, give your children whatever you want to. And there's nothing wrong with striving to make different choices. But also, if you are the mother like me, who has children who are autistic, or you really picky eaters, like, don't beat yourself up if they're having a bit of Nutella and toast. Like,
absolutely.
You know, it's
guilt
okay.
Guilt is an ingredient.
What?
Guilt isn't an ingredient.
I love that. That needs to become your new slogan. But I really, really found this helpful. I link GQ's page below because we didn't get to talk about it. But really, her page is full of kind of the good part of the viral social media, where you kind of take the viral ingredients that you see and then she tries them out and mm-hmm, tries to make them more nutritious. And it's actually really a really clever idea. But I find it going, oh, I could actually make that. That makes sense. That is nice. And some of them are quite easy to make.
So easy. And that's my kind of thing. It's everything needs to be accessible, yeah, affordable, evidence-based, and yeah, just fit for life.
Fit for life. Yeah. So thank you so much for joining me. I'll link her page in the description below. And Yeah, this was a really deep conversation, but we ended on a light note.
Absolutely. No, it's been great. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening. If you found today's episode helpful, please hit the subscribe or follow button. But most importantly, please share with your friends. Because if you related to any of the topics on today's episode, I promise they will relate too. You can also leave me a review and a rating wherever you're listening. I'd really, really appreciate it. If you would like to avail of some additional resources, please visit my Instagram page, Mind Mommy Coaching, or join the village via the link in the description below. I hope you have a wonderful week, and remember, it's not selfish to mind mommy, it's essential. Mumfessions is an Insanity Studios production. The head of production is Charlotte Mason. The head of digital is Ed Buckley. And the production assistant is Abby Sandler.